Good morning. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. I'm Janine. This is Get the Funk Out. If you've never heard of my show, you can head over to the show blog, learn more about my show, about myself here at the station. Been here a long time, hosting this show since 2011, and you can learn about my first guest, award-winning filmmaker Gail Friedman. Let me tell you a little bit about her. She is a director, producer, and writer for more than 25 years of documentary work spanning public health, social issues, and human stories. Her previous films have explored everything from cognitive disabilities and the opioid crisis to the making of the 9/11 memorial. Now, her newest documentary, No One Cares, really caught my eye. It takes an intimate and immersive look at severe mental illness and the grassroots movement pushing for change. She is joining us right now. Good morning, Gail.
Good morning, Janine.
You're calling in from snowy cold New York City.
That is correct.
Oh, I love New York. So I want to thank you for taking the time. I know you are incredibly busy. Before we dive into this film, and congratulations on your documentary.
Thank you.
No One Cares. Before filmmaking, you were actually, I believe I read, an aspiring concert pianist. Is that correct?
That is correct. That was, you know, in childhood and adolescence and maybe very early adulthood. Yep, that was my first love.
So how did you shift from music to storytelling?
Well, I guess that's the short version of that. When I went to college, my original intention, I thought about going to Juilliard, but decided instead to opt for a more liberal arts, general liberal arts education. And I intended to major in music. And then I got to Barnard in New York City and discovered belatedly that now you can major in performance. But at that time, you really couldn't do a performance major. You could do musicology and music theory and history, but you couldn't really major in performance. And so I started, and also I'd been trained classically, but was beginning to get more interested in jazz and other genres. So.
Okay.
I kind of bounced around to where I was an English major for a while. I was a poli-sci major for a while. I ended up being a sociology major, of all things. Mm. And then when I finished college, I always say I was going to go to one of the two Berklees. I either was going to go to the Berklee School of Music up in Boston.
Yes.
Or I was going to go into an academic sociology program at the University of California, Berkeley, which is what I ended up doing.
Wow.
And I think that decision wasn't exactly random, but I think it was dictated by a desire to travel far from my East Coast roots as much as anything else. So,
yeah.
And then I'd always been a storyteller. I mean, I edited every paper from grammar school to high school. I worked on the college paper. I was always interested in film. It just, I thought of it for years as an avocation rather than a vocation.
Mm-hmm.
It just kind of opened up. And once it did, there was no turning back, you know. So
fantastic.
It's not a short version, but it's probably the shortest version.
Well, great. It's great. And do you also work at 60 Minutes and for 2020 and things like that?
I did. For the first decade or so that I was in the business, I worked at the networks. And I was lucky because it was sort of the tail end of the good old days.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a great training ground, and I worked with some extraordinary people, and then realized that I really was interested in primarily in long-form documentary-style work just at the time when the networks were really getting out of that end of business. And so then it was time for another big leap, and I just decided that I was going to go out on my own and see how that went. And so I've been doing that for longer than I was at the networks, but it was an incredible training ground, and I'm
fantastic.
Very, very glad and very privileged that I had that opportunity.
I love that. And so tell me what led you to this film, No One Cares?
Well, it was kind of a three-part motivation. When I was a baby in the business at CBS, Ron Powers, who wrote the book No One Cares About Crazy People, same title as the film,
mm-hmm.
Ron was working at CBS, and I was a complete newbie, and he was already a well-established Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. And he was doing cultural commentary for Sunday Morning. And we met and became friends. And then, you know, life moved on. He and his family moved to Vermont. I left the networks. And we had lost contact on a regular basis, although we knew people in common, so periodically I would hear something. But I did not know of the great tragedy that had happened to his family. Mm-hmm. And so it was some years later, and I happened upon his extraordinary book in my local bookstore, and of course immediately picked it up and was, you know, stunned.
Yeah.
Saw clearly that there was the spine, the germ of a film, if you will.
Okay.
And so I reached out to Ron, and we began that exploration. And the film is not an adaptation of Ron's book. We're very careful to say it was inspired by Ron's book, but mm-hmm. it was the spark that began this. The second motivation was that also early in my career, I was a medical reporter. So I bring a certain kind of baseline knowledge. I always say I know just enough to be every doctor's nightmare. So there was that. And the third element was that my own mother lived with borderline personality disorder.
Makes sense, yeah.
Undiagnosed and certainly untreated for most of her life.
Mm-hmm.
And so those three strands, if you will, became a kind of a perfect storm for why this developed into a passion project that took, you know, 5+ years from beginning to end.
Yeah.
We just got started right before COVID. I mean, I had literally filmed a day and a half with Ron and his family before we got locked down. And the good news about that was that I had that time to really dig in, do an enormous amount of research, get to know an awful lot of people in that space, and kind of start to paint on a bigger palette, if you will. The film ended up growing more tentacles than I originally intended it to have. But I think we also were able to tackle some things that otherwise might not have been tackled. And as you probably know, an awful lot of the film takes place in California.
Sure. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, what's so fascinating, because I was looking at your background, is your work, your body of work, which I can see from things like Generation RX, exploring the opioid crisis, to breaking the silence barrier about cognitive disabilities. I feel like your body of work, Gail, has led you to this, making such an impactful film that we talked about offline is so timely, because there was a mental health crisis before COVID, and then in my perspective, it's been exacerbated.
Right. Yeah. No, I think that's exactly right. You know, I think that COVID not only, I think particularly for young people, complicated mental health issues. I think it also brought the subject to public awareness in a way that it never had been before.
Yes.
Because so many people did struggle on so many levels. But of course, for those with the most severe disorders, and that's really where our film focuses, you know, they were left out of the story beforehand, and sadly, to a large degree, still are. I do think we're potentially at a tipping point. I feel like there is an understanding of, an appreciation for, a curiosity about mental illness, perhaps more than there ever has been. So that gives me some hope.
Yes.
But it is still the reality, as you well know from your own work, that, you know, this is a real, real, real tough road to hoe.
It sure is. Yes.
Yep. Yeah. And, you know, I hope that we can, I mean, you know, a film doesn't change the world, but I think a film can help shift the conversation. So, to the extent that we can be a part of that, I'm grateful for the opportunity. Because you're right, that was an insightful comment. I do think in some ways, without having planned it that way, that how my career has evolved has led me to this, in a sense. I mean, it's definitely been a labor of love.
Yes. But I feel that when you create a life that is nonlinear, you're open to different fields and projects. It sets you up for some really exciting projects and personal growth.
Well, and aren't we fortunate that we get to make a living, more or less, mm-hmm. by learning?
Yes.
I mean, I consider it a privilege to tell people's stories, and along with that privilege comes a responsibility, and I'm sure you relate to this. It's not one that I take lightly. When people trust you with mm-hmm. their stories, one has to honor that. And
you bet.
And it's great. I mean, I certainly receive as much as anything that I give or impart.
That's wonderful.
It's very gratifying. I mean, there are people who I'm still in touch with and still friends with, you know, I made films about 20 years ago. So
really? You know. Oh, I love that. Well, that just shows the impact you made on a human level. That's great.
Well, and, you know, so many people, there's such a distrust and mistrust of the press right now. But mm-hmm. the reality is that if you treat people well and as you would wish to be treated, they stay in your life. And I
yes.
think that's an enhancement, right?
Yes, it sure is. Was there a moment during filming that your insights or your perspective on the mental health system changed?
I can't say there was one aha moment.
Mm-hmm.
I do think my perspective evolved. Full disclosure, I'm a left-leaning progressive mm-hmm. in my political views. And if you had asked me at the very beginning whether I ever thought there was a place for involuntary care, I probably would have said no.
Mm.
And I think what I came to understand, and I don't know how one can dig into this at all deeply and not kind of get to this point, is that there's no one-size-fits-all answer here.
That's right.
If you know, people tend to get trapped in their ideological and philosophical silos, and I was probably, you know, guilty of that as well. But the reality is that sometimes people really are so ill they don't know they're ill.
That's right. Yes.
And I'm sure you've heard this conversation before. You know, there's no other illness where we are judgmental and discriminatory in this way, where we, I think, end up neglecting people. If somebody's having a heart attack, if somebody's having a stroke, if
yes.
somebody has dementia, if somebody has diabetes, and any of those people are in crisis, we try to help them.
Yes, that's right.
We don't, and yet with mental illness, with disorders like schizophrenia and severe bipolar disorder and related, there ends up being, you know, I'm sure you've heard the expression that some of the advocates use, people are allowed to die with their rights on. Well, is voluntary care better? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody can participate in the decision and choose their own path, you bet. That's always going to be preferable. But sometimes when they're in crisis, maybe our first job is to save somebody's life.
You bet.
And help bring them to a point where they can exercise that self-determination.
Yes.
And so I think that was a shift and an evolution in my own thinking. Nuance, the word nuance keeps coming up when you ask that question, because I think nuance is really called for in these conversations, and yet it seems so hard to come by.
Yeah.
And so again, we tried to inject some of that into the film. I mean, my film editor, who I've worked with for over 20 years now, and we work very closely together, and we would have these discussions constantly in the edit room about, you know, are we being fair? How are we depicting that? What, are people going to relate to that? Are they going to mm-hmm. understand? And I think what So I think you see that unfolding of my own understanding reflected in how the film unfolds as well.
Definitely.
If that answers your question.
Yes, yes. I want to share something with you. I was in a store last week, and I was about to use the restroom, and two people stopped me. I was in a Lowe's. And I said, I just want to let you know that someone's in there and they're sick. And I thought, oh, they're throwing up or, you know, something
right.
is going on.
Right.
And I said, are they okay? And they said, oh, yeah, yeah, they're just sick. And I still didn't understand because I'm a member of NAMI and I've taken mental health first aid. And the labeling, the lack of education, the compassion and empathy is a huge issue, as you know. So it turns out that this woman was struggling with her mental health, and they wanted her to leave the store. And I just thought at that moment that there should be some training in place for really how to deal with someone, because I could hear the woman saying, you know, she just felt being shunned and discriminated, and, you know, and she could have heard them say to me, well, she's sick. And how does that make someone
what
feel?
What ended up happening?
They escorted her out.
Wow.
They escorted her out.
They didn't offer her help, just escorted her out.
They escorted her out. Mm-hmm. And it broke my heart, I just thought, wow. This is an opportunity for them to train, to educate, to provide compassion, because you don't know what someone's struggling with. You can't judge a book by its cover. And when I first studied, I'll make this quick, a qualitative research, remember my teacher saying, go out and sit in a coffee shop and notice people, or ride an elevator. Ride an elevator.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and
uh-huh.
Don't come back and tell me someone was drunk. Don't
uh-huh.
don't judge, don't label. You have to have facts. You have to, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's fascinating. Well, you know, I completely relate to your story, because another way that I think making this film changed me is, I ride the subway in New York City all the mm-hmm. time, right? There's all kinds of people on the train. Oftentimes there are people who are struggling in one way or another, and
yeah.
often that's kind of loud. On occasion, it's even kind of scary.
Mm-hmm.
And what does everyone do? They go to the other end of the car. They do their best to look away. They bury themselves in their phone. I can no longer look away.
Sure.
My own consciousness has been raised. Now, I'm not going to say that I would, you know, go out of my way to put myself in harm's way.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the more that we all can kind of work on that empathy gene, there is the opportunity to extend ourselves. And because I think part of the reason people don't like to think about this subject, I mean, you were saying when we were offline that when you wrote your book, there were bookstores that didn't want to have you in because they didn't want to talk about this.
That's right.
I think that's fear.
Yes, it is fear. They actually, point blank, Gail said, we're worried what type of people it's going to attract. I'm like, come on. Come on.
Well, Ron talks a lot about this in his book, which if you haven't read it, I highly recommend. He's a brilliant writer, and it's a profoundly moving book. But he looks back at, you know, centuries, actually, worth of attitudes towards those who live with difficult psychiatric conditions. And, you know, going back to medieval times, and in some ways we've progressed, and in other ways we haven't progressed very much at all.
That's right.
But another thing that gives me hope is the younger generation, because I think, as with so many subjects, they are, first of all, they relate. They know many mm-hmm. of their own peers who are struggling.
Yes.
I think that there are very few taboo subjects for them. I think they're much more open.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives me hope that this is, you know, that the subject is in some ways coming out of the closet.
Yes.
And that just as mass movements were created around AIDS and breast cancer and autism, that, you know, that same possibility exists with mental illness. So I see that as a net positive. But, you know, there is still a lot of fear. And, you know, the title of the book, which we also ended up using as a title for the film, it's a quotation from a Craven politician Which we explained in the first minute of the film, because I know the title itself can be very triggering for some people, but it's actually a quote, and we do go out of our way to explain it. But it was a politician's aide who was reassuring the boss, because there'd been a scandal at a county mental health facility. Don't worry about it, because no one cares about crazy people. Mm. But the reality is, I think lots of people do care.
Yes.
And like I say, that optimism is a strong word, but I do have hope.
That's good. That's really good. Now, where can people find out more about the film and see it?
Well, thank you. As you know, we're getting ready to screen in Los Angeles. I've been on this director's tour since the fall, basically.
So exciting.
All over the country, in California and Massachusetts and Iowa and Utah. And we're going to be in L.A. and Columbus and Minneapolis and Washington, back in California.
Fantastic.
And then later this year, we're going to pivot to streaming. So then we'll be in wide release and everyone will be able to see it.
Great.
We have a website, No One Cares Film, all run together, noonecaresfilm.com. And we're with the same handle. We're on Facebook and Insta and all the platforms. So, I really appreciate the opportunity to spread the word, and we're really looking forward to sharing the film with as large an audience as possible, you know, with a general interest audience, because one thing we're discovering at all of these screenings is that we fill them up. People come. The interest is there.
Yes.
So, you know, so it's been very gratifying after 5 years of work to, you know, to share it with an audience.
Well, and I love that you're going to be at UCLA. I know it is sold out for the UCLA Friends of the Semmel Institute. They do the Gen Z Wellness Summit, and I remember going in the past, and they talk about the loneliness epidemic affecting Gen Z, and it really all ages, but specifically Gen Z, and social anxiety and lack of connection. And so I love that you're back there March 1st.
Oh, we're thrilled to be there. It's
wonderful.
A great opportunity. They run wonderful programs, and the fact that they knew that they wanted this to be a live event screening, it is sold out, but we will be back in the Bay Area later in the spring, if anybody who's listening is up there. It's great. It's really very exciting. And
fantastic.
Yeah, I actually just lost my train of thought.
That's
so.
Okay. Well, I will say this. I'm hoping just to get 30 seconds with you March 1st. I'll just come say hi. I know you'll be so busy.
Oh, please do.
I will.
Please make sure you come up and introduce yourself. It'll be a delight to meet you in
person. I definitely will.
Thank you for the work that you do, Janine.
My pleasure.
It's really valuable.
Thank you.
And I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you. Gail, this has been wonderful. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. We'll speak again, I'm sure.
And I'll see you soon. Take care.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was Gail Friedman talking about her film, which is going to be at UCLA. And unfortunately, it is sold out. But as she said, it will be streaming at some point. No One Cares About Crazy People, a film by Gail Friedman. And put the movie poster on the show blog, getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org. And if you missed any part of this conversation with Gail Friedman, the director, producer, and writer of the documentary, No One Cares, it will be up as a podcast within an hour after I wrap. If you are not familiar with KUCI's shows, you can head over to KUCI.org. We have an eclectic mix of public affairs and music shows. Wonderful talent here at the station. I've been here a long time. And if you're not familiar with Get the Funk Out, my show first aired 2011. And every show is up on my show blog. Again, that's getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org. I did put the trailer for Gail's film up on the show blog as well. And the website is noonecaresfilm.com. We will take a little break. And then I have my next guest standing by at 9:30. Orrin Harmon is going to talk about his book, Metamorphosis. And this is going to be a great conversation. So stand by, and I'll be back. I'm Janine. This is KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions and views expressed in this program do not reflect those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. To find out more about this talk show or other talk shows broadcasting on KUCI, log on to our website at kuci.org or check out the latest program guide.